Good morning. This is session 101, professional learning community. Every 2 weeks we have these informal calls that discuss issues concerning environmental job training, job development, and we try to keep them as informal as possible. They are pretty much informal, and they don't represent EPA policy, but rather just ideas from various grantees around the country and people who are thinking of starting new programs. As I said, this is the 101st call we've had. If you have a friend, you could have them join. If you have a busy schedule, we send out post-session notes. And you can also get our recordings from the Brownfields Toolbox, and that's brownfields-toolbox.org. Every week we have happenings from Washington and seeing what's happened. And during this last couple of weeks, of course, the big news has been concerning the RFP. This is the request for proposals for the 2014 Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program, the $200,000 programs, or three-year programs. Those grants are due February 13th, and in early March, those who don't meet the threshold criteria will be notified. And then in May, the anticipated announcements will be made for the grant selection. Generally, they're announced in May. By the time the paperwork and goes through the grants office and everything gets settled, it'll be August when final project periods begin. Also about that time, we have an annual grantee meeting where we get all the new grantees together with EPA people and former grantees, and also individuals that are part of the professional learning community together, and we work out issues that are of concern to job trainers, and particularly in environmental training. We have people from EPA and involved in the grants office, and talk about allowable costs, about recruitment, about placement issues, about issues of fulfilling the grant requirements. So that is certainly on everybody's mind, and some of the people on the call are re-upping, and some are just considering this grant for the first time. Those that are re-upping are very familiar with the process. Those that are just submitting for the first time, you could submit your grant either electronically or by paper at this late date. We pretty much recommend everyone submit by paper, because it does take a few weeks to process, unless you've done this for other grants. It takes a few weeks to register for the electronic processing process in grants.gov. Other announcements that I'd like to make today is certainly the Green Jobs Conference that's going to be in Washington next week. This is going to be on the 10th and 11th of February. Green Jobs is an interesting conference. It doesn't just talk about environmental jobs, but it talks about all jobs that are green. It's highly supported by organized labor and also by non-organized labor, all kinds of tribal groups and NGOs attend. They're very much concerned with alternative energy, any kind of program that would generate green jobs for people. And, of course, environmental jobs, particularly in brownfields, economic redevelopment is one of those, but there are many others. If you're able to get to Washington, it's at the Hilton. You can register on site if you want. Another thing we'd like to mention is the Greatest Institute. This is a boot camp for health and safety training put on by Partnership for Environmental Technology and Education. It's called PEET, and the College Consortium for Health and Safety Training, CCCHST. They're associated with our group, and what they do every year is they bring together instructors annually that perform health and safety training, and they have a no-cost 10-day Greatest Environmental Safety Training program called Greatest. It's a great program. Now you get a renew of your trainer certificate, and you get into a program of technical assistance for training. If you're doing health and safety training, it's a great thing. The person to call is Patty Thompson, and we have her contact information in the post-session notes. Also, EPA has announced requests for applications for the 2014 Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem-Solving Cooperative Agreement. This is an annual grant that goes out every year up to about $120,000 per two-year project period. It doesn't directly relate to environmental job training, but it does relate to environmental justice programs. And you may want to look into this, and you may be able to use the same partners that you're using for the job training program to come up with a collaborative program involved in environmental justice in your community. And you may be able to get some synergy between the job training program and the environmental justice program. So again, in the post-session notes, we've got a link to the RFP and how you might apply for that. EPA also has environmental education grants that go out every year. These are small grants, but they go out every year, and they're distributed through all the regions. This year, EPA expects to award between 22 and 32 grants nationwide. Each award is about $75,000. They can go up to $200,000. And again, while it doesn't directly impact environmental job training, there may be some synergies in your organization that relates to environmental education grants. Often, you might see these programs at fairs and at public events. They're projects that community organizations do to raise environmental awareness in their community, and they're great little grants. You may want to look at that, and again, we've got the URL for that. There's also one other announcement in terms of the 21st Century Conservation Corps. Some of you belong to that. This is through the Department of Agriculture, and there is some request for letters of intent to become part of the Conservation Service Corps. It's 21 CSC, it's called, to engage young Americans and returning veterans to public lands and water restoration. This does have a fairly close link to job training, and some of our grantees have been associated with the Conservation Corps. It's a great program to get into, and it has to do with bringing youth training and bringing them into environmental restoration in the community. So that, again, we have contact information. They're just getting started to see what nonprofits may be out there that might be interested in getting into Conservation Corps service. And if you've got an organization that is looking at expanding and you're thinking of getting into that and associating yourself with the Department of Agriculture, you may want to find out more. Many of these programs, which also include the EPA program, sometimes you have to get your foot into the door, maybe even submit an application. They're all annual renewals and re-ups and new grants. See what the program's about. See how you might fit in. See how you may have to reorient your organization to get into this. But it's good to dive in and do some fact-finding and learn about the organization and then see if it fits your organization. And this also fits for the environmental job development program. Many of you who are new and have never submitted a grant may want to submit this grant, and perhaps even not anticipating getting it the first year, but get involved. start developing your partnerships, submit your grant. If you don't get it, look at it as a constructive process. See what you need to do to build your organization. Talk to the EPA regional coordinator if you do not get the grant. Find out where you are weak, what partnerships you need to build. Keep those partnerships around. Keep them alive. Keep your community informed and see what you need to do to strengthen your training or strengthen your partnerships or start building your proposal and your program plan. One thing about the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is when you submit that grant, it's set up so that it is so well documented and detailed that once you follow your plan, you're going to basically have a successful program. It's pretty well laid out what you need to do to have a successful program. So sometimes just to sit down and flat out write a grant in a month is pretty next impossible. This is a type of program where you need to build up your program slowly. You need to develop your network, get your partners lined up, start working with community organizations, start working with potential employers. There have been grantees who have actually started some programs. You may even want to start a program before you submit the grant and get the groundwork laid and then submit the program. One of the things I'd like to apologize for is this particular session, I'm going to be mostly me talking because we did have some technical difficulties this last Wednesday, and the program was cut off, so we're pretty much repeating what was done in that PLC for the toolbox. And for those of you who want to listen to the program that occurred Wednesday, or if you were part of the program and were cut off, you can listen to this this rebroadcast of that. Apologize for it. Doesn't happen too often, but we were on Wednesday, we were cut off about 10 minutes into the session, and one of the things we were going to do, and I think what we'll probably do is repeat it again on the 12th, which is February 12th, which is our next professional learning committee. We're going to talk about getting the best students into your program, and this is such an important factor that your program is not going to be any better than the students who are participating in the program and their ability to succeed when they get out. Unfortunately, with 20 students per cycle and perhaps three cycles in your grant, you're going to have limited number of seats available. And you're going to have a lot more people who may be interested in this program, depending on your demographics in your community. But we're finding, particularly in urban areas, there's a huge demand, a lot of people who want to or think they want to get into this field. And you're going to have a limited number of seats. So what you have to do is find out, figure out a way in your own organization, in your own community, what's the best way to screen and to find the best students. And while we hate to restrict anyone from this program, the fact is that because seats are limited, we have to find somehow the most deserving students, those who are most likely to succeed and have the desire. At the same time, we also have to find those students who are able to do the work. You can have the desire, and you can have the fortitude to attend every class, but if you don't have the background, you're going to have the remedial training before you go into the program, or you're going to have to acquire that so that you're not discouraged when you get into the program because you can't do the math or you can't digest the material. So when we look for the best students for our limited number of seats, we do a combination of things. We do extensive interviewing, and then we do I would call it an academic screening. And I believe we're going to talk about this next week, but again, I'd like to thank Ray Sullivan for giving us his approach to participant recruitment. Ray Sullivan is with the Northwest Workforce Investment Board in Waterbury, Connecticut. In the post-session notes, we'll have his contact information so you could reach them. Ray's program has been really successful. They had a grant application in 2009, and then they were re-upped, resubmitted an application, and received an award again last year. He's got an excellent track record for both retention as well as graduate placements. When one of our new grantees said that they were starting a new round of a new cycle of training, they wondered, what's everyone using out there? And Ray responded, the approach they use. Now, we're finding that there are several different approaches, but this is the one Ray uses. And now Ray is Regional Workforce Investment Board is a WIB, and they are in the business of finding, training, and placing people. They use the CASA, CASA exam. It's an employer competency system appraisal program developed by Comprehensive Adult Student Assessment System, that's how we get CASA. It gauges reading and basic math aptitude, and it works well to identify those that have learning issues that might prevent them being successful in the program. This is the CSSA is commonly used by many WIA programs, Workforce Investment Board programs. Whenever someone is deficient in math or in English, Northwest Regional Workforce Investment Board sends them to remedial classes first. In addition to the CASA exam, the students all get a drug test before they're considered for training or employment. In his case, there's absolutely no exceptions. Different programs have used different approaches. Some have accepted everyone but say, you will be drug-free, and we will test you sometime during this program, and if you don't pass, you're out. Some mandatory. Many of them are mandatory before you go into the program. Some of our programs have more of a faith-based focus, and some have a community drug prevention program associated with it, so there is just absolutely no question of no drugs. In terms of criminal background, that isn't really important. They and many of the other grantees say that's not a problem. The important point here is honesty and keep it up front. There is an issue when it comes to job placement. They have to be honest with the employers. Some programs in New Jersey and some others use state surety bonds, which are available for ex-offenders. And it's something you may want to look into. But most of all of our programs don't restrict people because of their criminal background. Now, obviously, there are some offenses that they can't allow. And also, when it goes to placement in terms of what the crime was, it might have an effect on placement. One interesting thing is that in the construction-related industries, which are many of our environmental job training program employers, many of the founders of some of these programs have had criminal offenses, and they're very open to ex-offenders and want to help. You'd be amazed at how many employers out there would like to help ex-offenders, and they are can be excellent students and work well in the program. So that does not seem to be one of the issues. Drugs are. In addition to that, there's this process of just not taking the test. The test is what shows that you have the academic abilities, you've got the smarts to do it, or you need remediation assistance. But after that, the big question is desire. And desire is one of those issues of, are you going to attend all the classes? You could be the smartest person in the world. You could be very motivated and have a challenge to get into the program. But are you gaming the system? Do you have nothing better to do? You're unemployed and you figure, well, let me try this out and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, what the heck? I haven't lost anything but some time and I'm unemployed anyway. Well, we have to ferret out those individuals who are either gaming the system or really don't have the desire to become an environmental remediator. And the question is, how do we go about doing that? And we find that more and more of our programs are developing a pre-training course. And what is a pre-training course? Some call it tryouts, as they do in Chicago. Some call it just pre-training. Some call it screening. In Ray's case, they enter a 35-hour pre-training program. And that pre-training program lets the staff see what kind of attendance records the students will have, what kind of attitudes they have, do they demonstrate a desire to get into this program, do they have the stick-with-it ability to complete the program. And different grantees are using different types of pre-training. Some are using construction training. Some are using, as in Ray's case, green tradesmanship training. Now, the issue here is the pre-training is not going to be covered by the EPA funding, but it may be covered by other WEA funds. It may be covered by another program. So the issue there is, how do you go about doing the pre-training and how do you fund that? And that also may include some remedial training. Often what happens in some programs, for example, they'll have construction training to begin with or some sort of pre-training. And then they're going to find out, are you okay, having gotten this training, are you interested in going into an advanced training which includes environmental remediation? And then you have additional interviews to see, is this the way you want to go? Do you have an inclination to go into environmental remediation? Do you want to go through this additional course of study? These people are familiar with the program. They're familiar with the facilities and in the instructors, and they can make a decision if they want to go ahead. And then you could really cherry pick the best students who are, in your opinion, the most likely to succeed and the most likely to place in the program. Is an excellent way and an expensive way to do this, but it yields really, really good results. We've had programs with 100% placement. What if you don't have the funds or the resources to do the pre-training? Well, then what you want to do is you want to do more perhaps what they do in Chicago in a tryout system. This was a different program where they had 1,000 people going for 100 jobs. And what you do is you have an involved application program. You have, at first, you may have an awareness night, and you're going to get a lot of people at the awareness night, several of them. They may start to fill out forms, and then they would have to come to a second night. And at that point, a lot of them drop out. And then those who are left at the second night have to go through a interview process. And again, more dropout. And people say, well, this is too much trouble. I'm not going to go through all this. And then some you may have actual class, a small class that they have to attend. And you have particular requirements in terms of attendance at the class, when it's going to be. And again, you're slowly, as you go through this process, you're screening down, and the idea being at the end of this process, you're going to have those people who are really motivated, really want to do this, are willing to go through the difficult times and have the ability to get to class all the time. And you may have people who really have the desire and ability, but they just don't have the means. And unless you can provide them with the means, they are not going to be successful in getting through the program. So a pre-training program works. A pre-screening tryout program works. Another approach that views is also family interviews. This is intensive from the point of view of staff, more than intensive from the point of view of having to put on additional training. But some of our grantees get to know not only the individuals very, very well, but also their families. We've had people who actually go to their homes and talk to their parents and their friends and get to know who they are. And they're friends of people who have been in the program. They're much more intimate programs where they get to know the students and they get a good feel for whether this person has a desire. And a lot of our staff in our grant programs, after a while, they say, you can tell who's going to finish the program and who's gaming the system and who's just doing it because they have nothing better to do. So these are all approaches you may want to consider in designing your screening method. I should mention what some of the other grantees use besides CASSA. TABE TABE tests are very, very popular. They're correlated to GED scores, and they're often used with the Department of Labor TANF program. The TANF recipients. So many of our programs use TABE, which is basic skills in reading, math, and language. It's widely used in vocational programs and welfare to work and in military programs. They use it often for general testing. So you may want to look into that. The issue with the TABE and CSSA is that what's your cutoff point? And we find that in urban areas, in general, they have many more applicants, so they have to have more stringent requirements. In more rural communities, you have more diverse populations of all ages. So your TABE may go 6th, 7th grade, where your urban areas are more popular, may be 8-10. It's quite a divergence. But as one grantee said, when they were working with ex-offenders and their population of entrants seemed to be a little older, some of these people had not been in class for decades. Some are in tribal areas. They need the wider range of TABE. Now, that places a greater demand on the instructor and the requirement perhaps for more remediation training, but it really depends on what your training is going to be for. And it may, your TABE and your CSSA score may determine what your curriculum is going to look like. So this all fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. So you may, if you're going to go with a population that's rural and very diverse and people who have not been in class, and you're going to go to 6th, 7th grade in math and reading, you may need more remediation, or you may gear your curriculum to four occupations that will not have that demand in terms of reading and math. So you could design your curriculum around your acceptance levels, so your screening levels. Another one that's used for screening is work keys. And this is a little more on the academic side. Work keys are developed by the ACT. These are the people who do the ACT Assessment College Entrance Exams. It's EEO compliant and provides reading and math information, applied math. Each test takes about 40 minutes. Work keys can be tied to a certificate program called NCRC. They've done that. They've got different levels: platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. And in those cases, generally the grantees are using the silver level. We've mentioned It's TABE, CASAS, and WorkKeys. It's three popular programs. I would say you really work with your workforce investment board, because they're going to be, in most cases, your closest partner in terms of finding and placing individuals. And I would see what's the most popular in your location. If TABE is the one, go with that. If it's CASAS, go with that. So these are some of the things you want to do early in your program planning. But again, no matter which one of these you use, as one of our grantees said, they have this seven-step process. They screen for driver's license, Social Security, green card, high school certificate. They have orientation meetings. They have the interview. They have, in their case, the TAB test, for the test for adult basic education. They determine whether remedial education is needed. They have a drug test. And most important, they have that final interview. They try to determine whether that person works well in groups. Will he attend all the classes? Will he accept new and difficult challenges, some that he's never tried before? Does he have a real passion for an environmental career? And, of course, last off, will he appeal to potential employers? Is he going to be employable when he gets out? So I would encourage you all to look at these different screening methods and see what works best in your community and go with that. One final note of this week is the 60 Minutes last week had a segment on Year Up, and it had to do with inner city unemployed individuals who were receiving training and were being placed in jobs in companies like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan, and an extremely successful program supported by financial institutions. But as I watched this segment, I thought, this is directly analogous to our environmental program. We're doing exactly the same thing as they are. They're supported by some industries that are flush and looking for students, looking for trained people. And they're finding people that come through these programs are excellent employees. And they actually fund these programs to the tune of as much as $20,000 per person they hire. We don't have that luxury, and we do need some federal assistance. Doesn't mean we shouldn't go out for foundation and private sector assistance, but you might want to go to YouTube and look up Europe and YouTube and look at that segment on 60 Minutes about Europe. And it's an excellent program. And while you're in YouTube, look up environmental workforce development and also EPA environmental training, and you'll get an idea of what some of the other grantees are doing. So I wish that we had not had technical difficulties this week, but for those of you who were not able to listen to be on the PLC call and are listening to this recording, tune in on February 12th, which is our next PLC session, and we'll continue the discussion. Y'all have a very good week. Thank you.